At 2 a.m. on February 5th of 1887, the Montreal Express was working its way up the cold iron nervous system of the North American Railroad network. It had pulled out of Boston hours before and was weaving its way beside the Connecticut River along the New Hampshire and Vermont borders. That's a lot of geography, I know. Just know this. The Montreal Express was a daily passenger train that ran back and forth between Boston and, you guessed it, Montreal. This time, though, the train was running behind schedule, nearly an hour behind, and it hadn't even left Vermont yet. They had a long, cold journey ahead of them. But as planned, the train pulled into the White River Junction railway station and stopped for passengers to enter and exit the cars. When it pulled away minutes later, it was nearly 20 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. Each of the passenger cars had a small wood-burning stove, but they struggled to fight off the creeping chill in the air. Everyone on board, 79 passengers and 6 crew, bundled up against the cold and did their best to keep their minds off it. As the train pulled away from the station, a conductor by the name of Smith Sturtevant walked up and down the aisles collecting tickets. Minutes later, as the tracks crossed the White River on the longest wooden railroad bridge in America at the time, the train gave a shudder. One of the crew, sensing something was wrong, reached for the bell cable and gave it a yank, signaling to the engineer to stop the train. But you don't stop a train that quickly. That's a lot of weight and a lot of momentum, and while the speed dropped rapidly, the train kept moving across the bridge. As it did, one of the sleeper cars snagged on a piece of railway track that had broken due to the cold. And when it did, the car veered away from the rest of the train and plummeted 60 feet into the river below. That car was joined by the 3 other cars behind it, and as it fell, they followed it down. Not to the rushing waters of the White River, though. No, with temperatures as low as they were, the river itself was frozen solid. It was as if the train had dropped onto pavement, or solid stone. The wood stoves and oil lamps exploded inside the train cars, and within moments, everything was a raging firestorm. And those flames licked up the support legs of the bridge, and within minutes, it too dropped into the gorge, landing right on top of the train. 5 of the 6 crewmen died that night. Of the 79 passengers, 30 of them perished. Most were burned to death in the fire. Some were crushed by the train, or the bridge. A few even drowned as the heat of the flames melted the ice. According to one local paper, only 8 of the bodies they recovered were identifiable. Those who were rescued were transported across the river to a farmhouse, where the injured and dying filled up the house so quickly that the rest were moved to the barn. Rescuers found Sturtevant, the conductor, and were able to pull him to safety, but he died the next day. A woman named Maria Sadler, who'd been returning home to Quebec, was found alive and pulled free, although her ankle broke in the process. She, thankfully, survived. When they found Edward Dillon, he was alive and uninjured, but pinned beneath a pile of debris. Heavy objects lay across his chest, a wheel from the train car, heavy timber, seats. And try as they might, the rescuers weren't able to lift the weight of it all in order to free him. Dillon, to his credit, stayed calm. He chatted with the crew. Then he turned his head, and his eyes went wide. The fire that was consuming the train was slowly creeping toward his location. He panicked. He begged. He pleaded. And the rescuers doubled their efforts, trying to dig him free. But it was no use. The debris was simply too heavy to move. When the first of the flames reached him, he cried out one final time. And then he closed his eyes. The 20 or so men who had been trying to free him could do nothing more than step back and watch in horror as Dillon burned to death right before their eyes. He wasn't the only one to burn to death, either. David McGray from Quebec was also pinned beneath debris near the fire. When it approached, he pulled out his pocket watch and wallet and handed them to his young son, Joseph, and then said his farewells before the wall of fire surrounded him as well. Today, locals still whisper about the ghostly figure of a man in a conductor's uniform who's been seen walking along the tracks. He's only ever seen at night, and only near the river. Maybe Smith Stewart-Devant has returned to help with the rescue efforts, and he's just never left. The farmhouse across the river has survived as well, but not without some baggage. It's said that so much blood soaked into the floorboards of the second floor that the stains can still be found on the ceiling of the kitchen. Another rumor says that animals refused to go inside the old barn. The farm, by the way, was known by the family name, Payne. And although the old wooden bridge has been replaced by a more modern one, the original abutments are still there. But the locals will tell you that more than just stone has survived. According to some, the area surrounding the bridge still has a smell. Many who have traveled across the bridge have caught the scent and have described it as a mixture of burnt wood and something else. Something less common than the cool New England air. Something less pleasant than the autumn leaves. It's the smell, they say, of charred human remains.